Arizona News Radio. Lawmakers and the Attorney General coming up with new tools to fight the growing copper theft problem in our state. State Representative Ted Vogt.
It affects every taxpayer in the state of Arizona when we have to go back and replace tens of thousands of dollars of damage for something that a thief profits from about 60 to 70 bucks a pop. And it has to end, and it will end in this legislative session.
Good news on foreclosures, relatively speaking. A new ASU-WP Carey School of Business survey shows things are improving, although rather slowly. One of the reasons, people are standing pat, fearing their homes won't bring much in a sale.
It's very difficult for people to sell. They may be underwater, or they aren't going to be able to get what they feel is the best value for their home. But for a lot of people, I think they've found out that probably they're in a pretty good home where they're located.
And Tucson officials decided last night not to break up their Reed Park Zoo elephants, Connie and Sheba. Both of them will be sent together to the San Diego Zoo. Bob Baker, Arizona News.
This check of your KFNX traffic is service of the 99-cent only stores. 4 o'clock hour, look for a collision at State Route 143 southbound at I-10. That's obviously going to create some problems. You may want to think about University. Also look for a collision Guadalupe Road west of the 101. And we do have an accident in the Far East Valley Power Road at Pecos. Get your new year off to a healthy start at 99-cent only stores. Get fresh strawberries, blackberries, 5-pound bags of russet potatoes and romaine hearts for only 99.99 cents each. Here's your Wednesday afternoon forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. It's gorgeous. It's mid-January, and we're going to hop into the 70s tomorrow and Friday to end up the work week. Over the weekend, clouds start to move in from the coast. That'll take us back to the mid-60s, and we will see some showers north of town. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. KFNX News Time is 4:05. Currently, we're at 66 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. Coming up, it's the show everybody's talking about, Legalese, with your host, Dennis Willinchek. Join Dennis as he has guest Arizona State Treasurer Doug Ducey. You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
My wireless internet bill was really adding up. So to save some money, I just used my neighbor's unpassword-protected Wi-Fi for free.
It's unpassword-protected because the signal doesn't go outside of the house. Now get off my couch.
Not to mention, I recharge my laptop for free.
Mm-hmm, not free.
And while I wait for all my downloads, they really need more bandwidth. I just grab a soda. Not much of a diet fan, but beggars can't be choosers.
You're not begging, you're just choosing.
Neighbors are great.
There's an easier way to save. Get online, go to geico.com, get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I'm sure you're thinking, boy, I'd like to pay less for my car insurance, but switching seems like a lot of work. All the hassle and whatnot. Well, I'm here to tell you that is simply not the case. GEICO makes it so easy to switch and start saving money straight away, without getting buried in a ton of paperwork. You know, that actually happened to me once. Literally, I was buried under my income taxes for 6 days. Haunting, really.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
Hey, have you got any money?
Don't look at me. Everybody's busted at this time. I'm broke. I ain't got no money.
So, due to unforeseen circumstances, we are now completely broke.
What happened?
Oh, nothing. Except nothing's worth anything anymore.
This is Dennis Willinchek on Legalese every Wednesday from 4 to 5, brought to you here from the downtown studios of KFNX, News Talk Radio 1100, and we are pleased today to be with Doug Ducey, who's our Arizona State Treasurer, and welcome to the show, Doug.
Thanks for having me, Dennis.
Absolutely, and we'll be getting to some questions in a minute. For our listening audience, if you care to talk with Doug, who's the State Treasurer, we are here at 277-KFNX. That's 277-5369 if you have any questions. I want to first introduce Doug for you. I'm here with Jack Willinchek, who just fortunately graduated law school, studying for the bar exam. And, of course, those are the immortal words of Chet Reynolds, our more than capable real host here, handling everything, and our producer here, Robert Bombeck. So thank you, guys. And I want to talk today about the budget and issues related to what's going on with the state budget and other issues related to basically money at the state. And Doug Ducey here was elected to his first term as treasurer on November 2nd, 2010, so really just passing the year mark, took office actually on January 3rd as our 32nd state treasurer. And basically, as Arizona's chief banker and investment officer, Treasurer Ducey oversees more than $10.5 billion in state assets and serves as an investment manager for local governments as well. And Doug here serves as the chairman of Arizona State Board of Investment and State Loan Commission, and on the state surveyor, as the state surveyor general, and a member of the state land selection board. Doug was born and raised in Toledo, Ohio, but Arizona has been his home now for some time, and where he met his wife, and married now 20 years with kids. And Doug built and developed two businesses that created jobs for Arizonans across the state, so he knows how to do that, which is rare in government. Doug graduated Arizona State University with a bachelor's in science and finance in 86 and joined Procter & Gamble on graduation, began a career in sales and marketing, and he was trained in management, preparing him for his role as owner and CEO of Cold Stone Creamery, which I'm sure many of you know, and sold that company with a partner in 2007. It had grown from a local shop, really, to more than 1,400 locations in all 50 states. So Doug is the past president of the Arizona chapter of Young Entrepreneurs and past president of the Greater Phoenix Economic Club, and has been inducted into the W.P. Carey School of Business Hall of Fame in 2004. And probably, I would suggest, maybe one of our youngest state treasurers, although I don't know if I should ask your age or not, but you may not want to divulge that. But
47.
Well, you look a lot younger.
Well, thanks, Dennis.
It's a compliment. Well, anyway, Doug, let me get right into it. Basically, as treasurer, now that you've passed the year mark, as we said, we've had you on the show before, and I told you then we'd like to monitor what's going on with the state of the state budget. So to begin with, tell our listeners a little bit about what the treasurer does in regard to the budget in terms of what your responsibilities are versus perhaps the legislature or the governor.
Sure. I think you can think of the state treasurer as the state's responsible banker. State treasurer doesn't collect the tax dollars, doesn't set budget priorities. I safeguard the funds that are collected and invest them to make a return for the taxpayer. Every dollar we make in earnings is one less tax dollar that needs to be collected. So I think if you think of it as the state's banker, that's the best way to.
All right. Well, most of us know that we're investing in things as private citizens that aren't making any money, including myself. So I'm kind of curious to know what the state is doing that's any different than that.
Well, believe it or not, the state treasurer manages $10.4 billion. To me, I think it's amazing we elect an official that the only qualifications they need to have are to be 25 years old and have been a resident of the state for 5 years.
Which is why we're lucky we have you.
Well, thanks for saying that. I mean, I do have a background in the private sector, and I did study finance, and I do want to bring that to what we're doing. And what we do, you know, the first thing we want to do, Dennis, we'll manage the state's bank account different than Dennis should manage his bank account.
Well, that's what I mean. How do you do that?
The first priority is always going to be safety. I mean, a dollar lost is not measured the same way as a dollar gained in the public sector. The next thing is we've got the state's bills to pay, whether we're going to fill potholes, pay policemen or teachers.
And you say you don't determine those priorities. That's done by the legislature?
The legislature and
the governor
in coordination will determine those priorities, but I'll make sure that those bills are paid on time. And like in 2009, when there wasn't money available to pay those bills, the treasurer would set up the credit facility with an outside source. In 2009, it was Bank of America. I mean, to give you some perspective on where we are, in December of 2009, the state bank account was negative $740 million.
Wow.
So we were borrowing to pay the light bill down at the state capitol. We're in a much different position today, and we can talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about it. We've got a few minutes before the break. How did you make a turnaround?
Well, our balance today is over $1.5 billion, okay?
It's amazing.
Very dramatic. And there are three things that I'd point to that helped with this. One is elected officials make decisions. And we had a legislature that was very responsible, would make unpopular decisions and actually cut programs and spending. We've got a governor that will say no to harebrained ideas and actually use the veto pen. We've got a conservative cash management plan out of the state treasurer's office. So those three things combined, along with a little bit of life in the economy. Now, I don't want to make it or cheerlead too loud that the economy is back, but it's certainly better than it was in 2009, 2010, and 2011. We're starting to see some signs of life, and 50% of the state's budget is built through the sales tax revenue. So as we see those transactions happening more often.
Well, that's good to hear that. I didn't know that. So that's actually on the uptick.
That's on the uptick, yes.
Interesting. Okay, so anyway, you were saying that now we're basically, we were in the red when you took over. We're now in the black, from what I'm hearing, which is always great. What about the investment side of it?
The investment side, we invest for things that we have to pay on a daily basis. We'll use mostly cash instruments so that we can have the maximum amount of liquidity.
Are you limited in what the state can invest in?
Yes, we are limited.
By law?
By law and by the Constitution in terms of what we can invest in. So we're not going to do anything too opportunistic or too entrepreneurial.
Right.
And you know what?
Which is kind of, in some ways, not a good thing, I guess.
I would say net, it's a good thing.
Okay,
because you don't know necessarily who's going to be elected. And what I think you want to do is put the office in a position where you can protect the taxpayer and the citizen. And you could get somebody that wanted to try something rather risky.
Good
might
point.
Provide a high
good
return.
Point.
But, you know, what if they were investing in real estate in 06 and 07?
Sure.
I mean, we would have regretted that. So you can't do that.
So basically you look for short-term kind of instruments. Is that what I'm hearing?
With the operating fund, you would look for short-term instruments with what's called the permanent land endowment. And that's the state was enabled by the federal government, which gave it federal land, which became state land. And
if
that state land is sold off, those dollars come directly into the state treasurer's office to be managed into perpetuity. We have $3.3 billion under management. If this was a
you mean when you say 3.3 under management, you mean the value of the land that you – that the state land department has is 3.3?
No, the value of the land that's been sold and monetized, and now we have that invested in
stocks
and
bonds. And that's in the state coffers, or that goes to the school districts, or what?
It's in the state coffers, and the proceeds go into the school districts.
Right, so that has to be distributed out.
It is distributed out annually.
But currently you have $3.3 billion in there?
That's accurate, yes.
But you can't really rely on that because you got to send it out, right?
Well, when you say rely on it, that is there exclusively for the use of the schools
right.
and other
determined – Right, so it's not for the general fund, so to speak.
It's not for the general fund, but every dollar that is invested and has a return there means that a general fund dollar isn't needed.
I got what you're saying. All right. Well, we're going to take a brief break for various announcements and commercials. And this is Dennis Wolinchek on Legalese, and we're here with Doug Ducey, State Treasurer. 277-KFNX if you want to talk to Doug, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Neil Bortz, mornings at 10 on KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wolinchek & Partners have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wolinchek & Partners focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wolinchek & Partners today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Attention women business owners looking for strategies to grow your business and build professional relationships with other successful women? Then we invite you to join the Phoenix chapter of the National Association of Women Business Owners. NABO is one of the five most influential organizations in the Valley, according to the Business Journal. We offer many networking opportunities, business education seminars, and a nationally recognized mentoring program. For more info, go to nawbophx.org or call 602-772-4985. That's 602-772-4985.
We will not be an easy target. We will never roll over and let pain plan our day, or let an ache tell us what we can and cannot do. We will not linger on the sofa, ask somebody else to bring us the mail, or take the parking space closest to the door. But what we will do is take action. We will plan ahead. We will protect our bodies and fight back by moving. Lace up our sneakers and grab our tennis rackets. We will bowl. We will do our morning laps and bike ride through Saturday afternoon. We will walk our dogs around the block. We will pass up the elevator and proudly take the stairs. Because arthritis can't beat us if we beat it first. In the fight against arthritis, you need a weapon. What's yours? To learn more, visit us at fightarthritispain.org. This message brought to you by the Arthritis Foundation and the Ad Council.
Check us out on the web at 1100kfnx.com.
This is Dennis Wilenchek on Legalese, and we're here with Doug Ducey, who's the state treasurer, and asking him questions about the budget and other related issues as to what the state treasurer does. We've had Doug on before, and it's a complicated area. And Doug has just explained, for those of you that tune in from time to time in your car or whatever, that the state has turned around a bit from the time when Doug took office last year. So we were just getting into that, and Doug, you were explaining to our listening audience basically that we're now in the black when we were in the red when you took office, which is an amazing thing. I don't think most people even know that.
Well, I would say we're slightly in the black, Dennis. We're not really out of that danger zone yet where an economic downturn could hurt us, but we're in dramatically different position than we were several years ago. We won't need to borrow this year to make it through the year operationally.
Right.
And we've got a positive cash trend is what I like to say. Now, some others out there, specifically some people on the left, are calling what we have a surplus. And I don't think you can really make a case for a surplus when you've done things like sell your state buildings, borrow for operating costs, use tricks and gimmicks and rollovers. And these are things that happened in the past. And I don't think it's, you know, I don't want to sit here and assign blame to anyone. What I want to say is we've got a fresh start here with a truly balanced budget, and we've got a state economy that's slowly coming back. We've got a bank account that's starting to fill up. Let's make some good long-term decisions, and let's be thoughtful as to how we spend this money.
Yeah. What's the biggest concern in that regard that you have coming up that you see that maybe there's something on the agenda that's going to cost the state a lot of money? Is there something really that's of concern that's on the horizon?
I don't see anything of concern in terms of what I'm hearing. We do have a financially responsible legislature, and like I said, we've got a tough governor who will make good decisions.
Yeah.
But whenever there are dollars around, you have to be concerned about what politicians will do with them.
Yeah.
So because we have $0 in a state savings account, we have no money in a
reserve. Did we ever have that?
We did. We had $600 million in the 2004-2005 time frame. Gives you an idea how quickly this can evaporate.
Yeah.
But I think any enterprise, public or private,
sure,
large or small, should have some savings.
Of course.
And then the
how do we get there? What's your opinion on how we get there?
Well, I think we set a target number in terms of percentage of the budget, and we begin to sock money away.
Is that being done?
It's not being done right now. No, yeah, it's not. The other thing that I want to advocate for is to pay down state debt. In our Constitution, it says that we can only have $350,000 of debt. As a state, we have over $8.5 billion.
Well, let's analyze that for a second. So, and that's a fascinating point I didn't really focus on or realize. So they actually set a dollar number, even though they know there's going to be inflation in the future. So that's kind of wild. You set a dollar number at a time when $350,000 is obviously, you know, then different than today. When was that done?
That was done in 1912.
Yeah, 1912. It's in the Constitution, $350,000. That was a lot of money back then.
Now, I don't know if it was written in 1912. I know today's state constitution says $350,000.
Yeah,
it's not adjusted for inflation. But even
how do we get away with that then?
Well, because they changed the definition of debt. And like I say, it's somewhat the tricks and gimmicks and bonding and things that happen. I mean, there's a reason that we call these people lawmakers. So this has all been done in the past. So rather than complain about it, it's really what are we going to do about it today? And looking at that, as large as that number is and as shocking as that number is compared to what's allowed in the Constitution, the size of our state's economy is about $250 billion.
Okay.
It's a very manageable debt. We can pay that debt down. We can pay it down over the course of time. But let's put together a plan, start to pay that debt down in this near zero interest rate environment. Let's put some money away in a savings account. Then we can argue about the other essential state services that you do in government.
Well, do you as the state treasurer actually, are you consulted at least on these issues?
Yes, I'm certainly part of the conversation on debt and state savings and budget issues.
But the governor prepares the budget, right, and submits it to the legislature,
That's
right?
Right. That's accurate.
And then there's, a committee of the legislature that deals with that?
That deals with that, deals with appropriations, and then we'll vote. They'll tweak. They'll go back and forth.
But, I mean, you have these kinds of conversations with those committees.
Yes.
And I assume the governor's office.
Yes.
And so are you advocating to put aside a rainy day fund, basically?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And I think the way we have the legislature and the governor's office comprised today, I think everyone's on the same page of wanting to do this. The governor wants to look at some other state priorities, which is, of course, her prerogative to do that. I'm supportive of what she wants to do in terms of buying back the state capital because it goes towards beginning to pay down that debt.
Yeah, let's talk about that while we're on. I'm glad you brought that up. We were talking during the break. My son took some new relatives of the family from Europe, actually, from Holland, over to the state capitol to look at them. Right, Jack?
That's right.
And my understanding was he was in shock that we don't own our capitol buildings. And I think most people would be. So that's a bizarre thing right there. Now, who owns the state capitol buildings?
Well, we worked with some financial managers so that we could bring in short-term operating cash and pay an interest rate, and basically was a lease purchase agreement where we would buy the buildings back over 20 years. What the governor is saying is because we have a different financial situation that we're in right now, which is more positive, let's buy back the capitol building, the House and the Senate, begin to pay down that debt.
So she's got that in her new budget.
She does, and that was part of her State of the State. And
yeah.
For me, one of the things that I'm most passionate about is that we do begin to pay down that debt. And I'd like to see us have a broader cash management plan on how we do that. Now, the trouble –
Well, there are other buildings too, aren't there? There's 20 other buildings.
There are 22 buildings in total. So
yeah.
There's other buildings.
But those are the main ones right now that she wants to focus on.
Well, the optics of
right.
your state capital,
and the
your
perception,
house, and
I
your
think.
Senate. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a perception thing, I think. So that's good. So that's in there. Let me ask you this. How does the budgeting process, to your knowledge, in the state system work differently than the county and city and town level? Is there a real difference, fundamental difference in how it works?
Well, wherever the state lands on its budget is going to determine and affect counties and cities.
Mm-hmm.
States are sovereign in comparison to, say, the federal government, but counties are there at the pleasure of the state, and same with cities. And because we use a revenue sharing model, if the state tightens its belt, well, that's going to ripple to counties and cities.
What does that mean? I'm not clear on it. I'm sure many of our listeners aren't.
As we collect state sales taxes,
yeah.
a percentage of that will go back to counties and cities.
Okay.
That way we don't have different
– But, I mean, that's a set amount. It's not in dispute.
That is a set amount. There will be some cities and municipalities that will have their own sales tax on top of the
right.
state sales
right.
tax. But that shared services agreement has worked in the past. What I find when I get around the state and I communicate what's going on at the state budget, and I think with some amount of pride for 1 year in office, standing up saying our state budget is balanced, no tricks, no gimmicks, no borrowing, no rollovers, I'll hear sometimes in outer counties outside of Maricopa, somebody will stand up and say, you know, you balanced that budget on the backs of the counties. Well, the fact of the matter is there was only so much money, and the state had to make difficult decisions. But when it decides to spend less, that is going to ripple to the counties and the cities that they're going to have to spend less. So government has finally tightened its belt. I'm sure that Dennis and Jack tightened their belt in 2007. Every small business and big company in the state tightened its belt, but it took government to 2011 to actually balance its budget.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the message of that is that the counties and the cities have to do the same.
They have to do the same.
Unfortunately, it trickles down to them. But now, what is the status of funding state worker retirement plans and health care costs? Is that somehow affected by the budget process as well?
It's not so much affected by the budget process as it's affected by the markets. The state pension plans for state workers, teachers, firemen, people that are out there on the front lines and doing the essential services of the state are in a defined benefit program. So we work with the markets, ASRS, which is the Arizona State Retirement System, and the Public Safety Retirement System, work within the markets to provide that benefit. We're taking a look at those pensions, how they're funded, and what reforms can be done to ensure that those benefits are there when these workers retire, because we are in a much different financial landscape than we have been in years past.
Now, it's my understanding that, for example, Scottsdale and other Arizona cities' property tax increases are regulated by the state at a 2% per year maximum. Is that accurate to your knowledge?
That's written into statute, I believe.
So what is that considered, like a cost of living type increase or what?
That's considered, I don't necessarily know exactly what that is considered beyond traditional inflation.
But is there something similar for the state budget as well?
No, there's
state
not.
Property tax?
The state, what you're looking at, I believe, Dennis, is county property tax and not state property tax.
Yeah, because there really isn't any.
That
state
isn't how we do
tax.
It, yes.
It's really just sales tax. And so the city of Scottsdale, for example, which is, as I understand it, considering raising property taxes, doesn't have any effect on the budgeting process of the state.
It wouldn't affect the state budget. Those are services that they want to provide in the city of Scottsdale, and those decisions will be left to the voters of Scottsdale and the Scottsdale leadership.
Okay. And just before our break, I was just curious about selling bonds. Is that considered something the state's going to do? We have about a minute before the break.
Well, I mean, you sell bonds when you have a reason to sell bonds. There was actually some discussion last year that we would sell bonds for operating costs, which I think is
it's pretty, very dangerous.
Not good policy, much like leasing back your state buildings.
Yeah.
So at this time, Arizona continues to grow, and oftentimes bonds are used for schools or certain infrastructure. But to talk about whether we're going to bond or not, I think is unproductive versus talking about what we would bond for.
Well, we'll come back to that topic, actually. We have some more questions on that in just a minute. This is Dennis Wolinchek on Legalese with Jack Wolinchek as well. And we are going to turn to some commercial messages and be back with State Treasurer Doug Ducey.
CNN Radio, I'm Edgar Tragetz. Because it says there hasn't been enough time for sufficient review, the Obama administration is rejecting the controversial Keystone Oil Pipeline expansion project. That decision drew swift response from House Speaker John Boehner this afternoon, who says it's a job killer.
The president's policies are making the American economy worse rather than better. And this latest decision is just but the latest example.
The project might not be dead, though, as the State Department left the door open to subsequent applications. On the campaign trail in South Carolina, it's 3 days until the GOP primary. The latest CNN ORC international poll shows Newt Gingrich has closed the gap on frontrunner Mitt Romney, now separated by 10 percentage points in support of likely voters. With the second of two winter storms moving through the Seattle-Tacoma metro areas in line for one of the largest snowfalls there in decades, perhaps up to 8 inches. Other parts of the Pacific Northwest have gotten 16 inches. This is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio. Phoenix and Glendale police currently investigating an officer-involved shooting, the incident apparently occurring where the two cities' borders intersect. President Obama announcing he'll be visiting Phoenix next week, part of a five-state swing following a State of the Union address. Copper thefts are being felt statewide. At the state capitol, they're planning legislation to stop the thieves, Representative Tom Voorhees.
Defending other businesses and defending individuals, the homeowners, and defending the churches that get their copper stripped out and a congregation has to sit through church in 110-degree heat.
Another bill would get tough with political groups just formed to influence elections, Secretary of State Ken Bennett.
We're in the process of trying to get information from the entities, but under the current parameters of the law, it's very easy for them to say, no, I'm a legitimate corporation doing many other things, and I really don't have to comply with anything that you'd like me to send in to you to prove otherwise.
Bob Baker, Arizona News.
This chunk of your KFNX traffic, once again, a service of Advil Congestion Relief. We still have that closure, gang. Police activity, 59th Avenue at Cactus. It's closed for a half mile in all four directions. You may want to think about 51st Avenue or perhaps Thunderbird this afternoon.
Advil Congestion Relief treats the real problem of your sinus congestion, reducing swelling due to nasal inflammation. The right relief for the real problem is Advil Congestion Relief. Here's your Wednesday forecast.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. It's gorgeous. It's mid-January, and we're going to hop into the 70s tomorrow and Friday to end up the work week. Over the weekend, clouds start to move in from the coast. That'll take us back to the mid-60s, and we will see some showers north of town. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Thank you, Jimmy. Currently, we're at 65 degrees. Our next news will be in 30 minutes or when it breaks. You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100. I'm Chet Reynolds, and you're up to date.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
Did you know that more than 65% of corporations on the New York Stock Exchange are using barter? In fact, more than 470,000 companies in the U.S. participate in barter. What do they know that you don't? Think you know barter? Think again. With Premier Barter, the Valley's fastest-growing and most business-friendly barter company, you can gain access to a network of more than 40,000 companies. Through Premier Barter, you can expand your customer base and generate barter dollars, which can be spent through hundreds of companies locally and thousands of companies nationwide. Almost anything you can think of, things you're currently buying for cash, can be acquired with barter. Visit www.premierbarter.com. It will be the best business decision you ever make. 602-470-8020. That's 602-470-8020. More than 470,000 companies in the U.S. participate in barter. What do they know that you don't? Call Premier Barter today. That's 602-470-8090. PremierBarter.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Cates, host of A Call to Rights here on KFNX. If you haven't heard our show every Saturday from noon to 2, you're missing out on the greatest in news, commentary, and guests discussing your rights under our Constitution. The latest updates on how to protect your rights from an out-of-control government. And you'll learn our most important motto, how never to be a victim. If you're concerned with the direction our country is going, tune in and learn how to help take it back. Take back your rights on A Call to Rights with me, Steve Cates, Saturdays at noon on KFNX.
This is Dennis Willinchek on Legalese, and we're here chatting with Doug Ducey, our state treasurer, and a lot of interesting topics about the budget. Some of them are very technical, and we're trying to keep it to a minimum because it is a complicated subject. But, Doug, one of the questions I had for you that just has nothing to do with our budget is, why did you get into this? Why did you run for state treasurer, and what motivated you to do that?
Well, my company was Cold Stone Creamery. I'd been in the private sector my entire life. We built Cold Stone to 1,440 stores.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Thanks. All 50 states. And
It's still around, right?
Oh, you bet. Yeah, you bet. I sold it in 2007 and got involved in some stuff in the public sector, got some encouragement to run, and thought we have a lot of good talent back in Washington, D.C. But I was concerned at the state level. Our budget was being described with words like broken, bankrupt, insolvent.
Well, it was pretty bad, wasn't it?
And I thought, how, with the run that we've had as a state over the last couple decades, can we literally be out of money? The then sitting state treasurer, Dean Martin, decided to challenge the governor. And I thought, this is a perfect place to enter. This is about the numbers. I studied finance. So I jumped in and ran for office.
Yeah. Seems like a logical choice, actually.
Yes.
But now, do you have any other aspirations, or is this where you want to wind up, or it's too early to tell?
Well, I'm in the first year of a four-year term,
right.
So I'm happily focused on this office. There's certainly a lot to do. There's a lot to learn, and I want to answer a couple other questions.
Sure.
About this. One, do I like what I'm doing?
Yeah.
And can I be effective at what I'm doing? And I want to do this job with excellence, and so this is where my focus is, Dennis.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's get back to some of the issues on the budget. Now, you're telling us that we're sort of turning the corner a bit for a variety of reasons, not only just the investments, but also some wise choices, I guess, and things that we've taken out of the budget from the past. And what about the public participation in this realm? How much does the public directly participate in and setting these budget priorities, other than obviously legislators they elect, but.
Well, that's where the direct participation is. I mean, that's the.
Well, the reason I asked that actually is because we were reading something here. Our producer, Robert, passed on to me that I guess new Phoenix Mayor Stanton says that he'll hold 15 community meetings in April to get public input on the city budget priorities. So I was kind of curious if the state had anything similar in mind.
Well, the state has a process of legislative district meetings where you've got two legislators and one senator from each of those districts.
Yeah.
And those meetings are very robust in terms of discussion and what the priorities of the individuals in the room are. But that's the beauty of our representative republic is we elect people. We have them come to the state capitol or go back to Washington
yeah.
and decide on these priorities. And at the state level, our Constitution allows for direct democracy in terms of initiatives that can be brought by individual citizens who never run for office, or ideas can be referred from the legislature to the ballot. So there's a lot of different ways that the legislature gets input and feedback. But at the same time, I think in this business, I mean, you want to be in front of the people, asking the right questions and listening more than talking, for
yeah.
sure.
Well, the city of Phoenix, for example, it's my understanding, was able to save money by using its credit rating, which appears to be a good credit rating, to refinance some of its debt at lower interest rates. The state, I would assume, has considered that but is not in the same position. Would that be accurate?
The state's credit rating is AA-. The good news on the credit rating is for the past year, it's had a negative outlook from S&P, who just upgraded that outlook to stable. Part of the reason that they had a negative outlook was what had happened in the past, the fact that we had a budget deficit, the fact that we had a temporary sales tax. But the legislature and the governor acted, so they've acted on that good news and what they see as the positive cash trend.
Well, let me get that straight. So the state's credit rating, you're saying, is gotten better.
Its outlook has gotten better. It's been AA- for.
So that hasn't changed.
That hasn't changed, and that's investment grade. It's just there's room for improvement from AA-.
How do we stack up vis-a-vis other states in that regard? Do you know?
We are the best you can be is a AAA state. AA- is in the bottom five states, and that's where we are.
We're in the bottom five states
in terms of credit rating. Yes.
Wow. That sounds serious to me. So what do we do to change that?
Well, we do more of what we're doing. I mean, the way you improve your credit rating is you improve your financial health. That's why I'm advocating to pay down that debt, to put money away, and to get the budget where we're living within our means. The states that have a AAA rating, that's what they're doing. There's nothing magical about it.
Mm.
It's the same way when you look at a private organization that can brag about its credit. It's living within its means. And
I mean, that really does affect the bottom line, right? Because, I mean, you're paying more, basically, for money.
Well, the better your credit rating, the lower your interest
yeah.
rate's going to be on bonding and borrowing, and that's the opportunity for the state.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of serious. I didn't realize that. So how often do they review that, and what do you see happening on that, like in terms of reality? How many years is that going to take for us to improve to a AAA?
They review it twice a year. If they change it, it would be at one time in a year. And I think that rating can be improved. I mean, I think we should have a goal of a AAA rating. And I think you can do that within a 5-year time frame. I mean, we are able to borrow if we need it. So what we don't want to do is not provide essential state services to just achieve a AAA rating. But you want to see the state going in the right direction. And when you see that changing in outlook from negative to stable, that's the beginning of the right direction.
Let me see if I understand that. I'm sure people have the same questions I do. The state doesn't derive revenue, as we established earlier, from property tax. So obviously Arizona being one of the states hit worst by the whole property debacle. So if sales tax is the issue, why would our sales tax revenue be hit more than, say, any other state, where we would be in the bottom five?
Well, when I say bottom five, I'm talking about the credit
right.
rating, not about the sales tax.
Right, but I mean, obviously the revenue generated by the state, I would think, would have something to do with the credit rating, no?
Well, to simplify it, what
yeah.
you have is you have ongoing spending. And when you have a recession, I mean, what really is a recession except a slowdown in transactions? when you have fewer transactions, you have less sales tax. We had dramatically fewer transactions, so our spending continued, but the taxes, what people call revenue that came in, went the other way. That hurt our credit outlook.
I see. Yeah, I'm just kind of curious as to other states, why they would be more stable, really. I guess because you're saying because of the real estate problem, people were spending less, basically, is what it boils down to.
Well, we had begun to spend more under Governor Napolitano. We were spending ahead of the rate of inflation and ahead of the rate of state growth. That's a no-no. I mean, yeah. that works out just fine if there's never a downturn.
And, of course, the real estate crash, if you will, didn't really happen while she was here, did it?
The political timing there was remarkable. Yeah. She left in 2008, yeah. And Governor Brewer came in, and she had an incredible mess to clean up. Yeah. And she, you know, it's amazing to think that here we are in 2012, and we're not out of the woods, but we're certainly headed in that direction. And there were some really difficult decisions that had to be made along the way.
Real quick, before our next break, which is coming up right now, what do you think, taking off your treasurer hat and putting on a private hat, how long is it going to be before this economy gets better?
2 years. I think it's 18 months to 2 years. I do think the economy is going to get slightly better month over month, but we've got a housing inventory to clean up. I think it's better than the perception is.
Yeah.
And here's the good news, okay? Arizona's continued to grow through this downturn. We continue to add population. Once the rest of the country gets unfrozen in their mortgage and says, what are we going to do next? I think we're going to go faster and healthier than we ever have in our past.
Well, I agree with you. We're going to take a break in a second, but if there's any place people are going to move to, Arizona is one of those places. There's no question when things get better. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back talking with State Treasurer Doug Ducey about many issues, including how the federal government is affecting our state. On KFNX, News Talk Radio 1100, this is Dennis Wolinchek on Legalese.
How do you get the most from your employee benefits plan? What will be the impact of national health care reform? How can I provide benefits for my employees at a reasonable cost? Tune in Monday night at 8 p.m. for Benefits Briefing with employee benefits experts Bernie and Cindy Hines. Benefits Briefing, Monday at 8 p.m.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wilinchek & Partners have provided the quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wilinchek & Partners focus on cases involving breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wilinchek & Partners today at 602-606-2810. That's 602-606-2810.
How would you like to put your troubles with the IRS behind you? If you are behind on your taxes, don't try negotiating with the IRS alone. The IRS can take advantage of taxpayers who don't know the law or collection procedures. Ameristar's team of enrolled agents, tax professionals, and CPAs with master's degrees in taxation can go to work to protect you from paying too much. Get fast relief with Ameristar Tax Centers. Once the proper paperwork is filed, Ameristar will deal with the IRS directly so you don't have to. Plus, Ameristar Tax Center is a certified member of the Tax Freedom Institute. We know your rights. We know the secrets to getting you maximum savings. Get real tax relief by calling for a free, no-obligation consultation. The call is free. The consultation is free. Call 800-761-7056. If the IRS is garnishing your wages or sending threatening letters, we can help. Call now. 800-761-7056. 800-761-7056.
Your home for the Michael Savage Show. Monday through Friday starting at 5. Only on 1100 KFNX. And streaming live at 1100KFNX.com.
I was gambling in Havana.
I have been gambling in Havana lately, but maybe Chet has, our board operator here. This is Dennis Wolinchek on Legalese, and we are leading into the Michael Savage Show after the break, for those of you that are waiting for that show. And we're here, fortunately, talking with Doug Ducey, who's the state treasurer, and talking about budget issues and how that affects us all. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, Doug, before we're done today is about the federal government and how the federal government policies affect our state and our budget. You have any I'm sure you have some thoughts on that.
Well, I certainly do have some thoughts. I really think the federal government could learn something from the state of Arizona. You know, elected leaders actually can make difficult decisions. They can cut spending. They can get a budget in order. They're not doing that in Washington. I think people are disappointed and disgusted, and there's a reason why people are so grossed out about politics. But I would like to see them do this, and I think it can be done. We've certainly got some good people back there that are on the right side of this discussion. But at the same time, we need some leadership to make this happen. We need some real action. And the spending has got to stop back there. This is a spending problem. You know, and there's a lot of confusion where people want to talk debt and deficits, and I'm very comfortable talking those things. But the reason we have the debt and deficits is because we're simply spending too much money.
Well, but let's just chat about that for a second in conceptual terms. I mean, obviously, if the federal government spends less money on certain things, the state may wind up having to step in and spend that money, right? So that's one of the problems you have.
Well, you're being theoretical.
Theoretical.
Here. Yes. Yes, that's possible.
Right.
At the same time, we're spending more money than we have at the national level. We're borrowing 40 cents of every dollar. No enterprise, public or private, large or small, can continue to exist if it continues doing that into perpetuity, and that's where we're headed.
I guess what I'm trying to think of is what program can you think of the federal government, if they were to remove it, would cause the state some grief in terms of its budget going up, having to cover it?
Well, how about just any program? Pick any program you want and remove it, which probably isn't productive.
Let's talk about education, which is, I think, on my mind.
Well, we wouldn't want to remove education. I mean, this is what education does.
So suppose the federal government were to cut down on its educational spending.
Well, let's think this through, though, Dennis.
Yes.
When you talk about federal government spending on education, where does the federal government get its money? It gets it from the people in the state.
Sure.
The case I'd like to make is I think we'd be better equipped in the state of Arizona if we had that money, if parents had that money, and they could make decisions on what's best for their children and where to get those that education. And that's not just a theory. We have some of the best charter schools in the country here. I mean, the Basis School started by Craig Barrett, the Great Hearts Schools, Veritas and Telios and Scottsdale Prep and Chandler Prep. These are some of the best schools, not in the state, in the country.
Yeah.
Veritas came in 3 in the nation in math and 8th in the country in reading. These are public schools, but these are dollars inside being determined by the principal and the parents where they're being spent. And when you have these guys in Washington that are moving levers thinking that they can help educate kids in special situations in Arizona, the evidence is it's not working. Our education system is going the other way. All you have to look is at the growth of the federal budget in education, meaning that they're spending the money out of Washington, and the SAT scores. They grow in inverse proportion. Let's bring that money home. Let's let educators, smart people, business folks and parents get involved and have school choice and competition and lead in education, not just in the country but in the world. I mean, other countries, if you look at the conservative numbers, they'll say that we're 13th in the world in education. You look at the liberal numbers, they'll say we're 16th in the world in education. I mean, there was a time during our lifetime, Dennis, where somebody could say we're number one in K-12 education.
Of course.
What's happened?
Yeah, well, that's a great point. What has happened? What's going to happen? Let's talk about that. What are we going to do about it?
Well, I think this idea of Washington sees that it needs to tighten its belt, just like state government was last to tighten its belt. I actually misspoke, because it's the federal government that's been last to tighten its belt. So those dollars that are back in Washington are Arizona dollars. Let's bring them here and let's innovate. We've got some models. I mentioned two of them just a minute ago. Let's take those models. Let's reapply them. Let's get good principals inside the public schools. Let's have reforms that allow great teachers to be rewarded and continue to teach, and allow people that maybe shouldn't be in that system to find other places to work, just like you do in any organization. I mean, this is a very fixable problem when you look at other things that we've tackled as a country over the last couple hundred years.
Yeah, good points. And so let me ask you this now, coming up over your next year, you're just turning the corner on your first year. What can you do as the state treasurer in terms of your influence or you know, what you actually do as your actual duties to try to move us in the right direction to get that 5-year plan going and to make sure that we're actually turning the corner, not only turning the corner, but actually increasing the state revenue. What can you do about that?
Well, because I'm in the room on the budget discussions, because I am the state's banker, because I do steward these funds from a fiduciary standpoint, I'm going to get attention and I'm going to be able to persuade, which is really what you do in politics. There's no one that has a magic wand and can say we're going this way and they make the unilateral decision. But I want to be part of that discussion. I do think we have really fine elected leaders at the state level, and we've seen what the legislature has already done. We've got 1 year left with this group of people, then they'll be held accountable at the ballot box. But let's make those difficult reforms.
Let me ask you this way. Are we talking now about this breaking down along political lines? I mean, is it the old saw that the Democrats want to just keep spending and the Republicans are the ones tightening the belt? Or do you see it as there are some responsible people on both sides of the aisle that are trying to get this done and tighten our belt and also find ways to increase revenue for the state?
What I think I can say from the state treasurer's perspective, I don't think there's a more nonpartisan position in the state than the state treasurer. I mean, being a good banker is not being a Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative. It's about being clear and accurate and responsible.
Absolutely.
So I do try to judge each legislature on the merits of what they want to accomplish. I do find that sometimes some of those stereotypes are true, and when you're trying to talk to someone, and I'll give you an example around this debt. Let's begin to pay down the debt. We'll get in some of these discussions, and people will just talk about how education has been devastated. Well, I know education has also had to tighten its belt, but I would say we've been spending that money and we've not been getting good results. If you judged education just on the amount of money spent, then Washington, D.C. would have the best education, that school district in the country. They spend more per student in the D.C. schools than any other district. They're failing. Yeah. They're failing. Yeah. The money isn't the answer.
Money
alone
is not the answer.
You need great teachers, you need high expectations, and you need a way to hold the system accountable, meaning when a teacher doesn't belong in there, she needs to be either retrained, and if she doesn't accept that, then she needs to be removed. And people
so you're
don't
saying
like
even on
that.
These budgetary issues, there's not a real consensus among the people in the legislature on a party-wide – I mean a non-party-wide basis. You're saying – It's mostly the Republican-controlled legislature that's causing this or not?
No, this Republican-controlled or what you might call Republican supermajority, this is rather new. This is a message of 2010, which was really the year of the Tea Party. I think sometimes the Tea Party can be misunderstood. The Tea Party is the only group in recent memory that has been out there just beating a drum solely on spending.
Yeah.
Solely on spending.
I mean, now is the time. We've got a Republican governor, Republican-controlled legislature. If the Republicans are true to their word, then we should be fine in the next couple of years, don't you think?
Well, one, I think we're doing it. I mean, I think the evidence is in from the first year. Now it's really what happens this next year, and it's laying the groundwork where you have a healthy state financially, and there's really no better way to solve our issues on education and everything the state does than to get the economy growing.
Well, I agree. Even on social issues, let's just assume that the Democrats are big on social issues, which is not a bad thing. But if there's money to pay for it.
If there's money to pay for it, I really think if whether you're on the right side of the equation or the left side of the equation, we have to agree that we've got to –
still need money.
We need to fund this.
Yeah.
And the best way to fund it – and there's no more fun argument than arguing over the dollars that we have in the bank, whether they go into a savings account, pay down debt, or we give them back to the taxpayer. And if others want to talk about effective places to spend them that they see as essential state services, this is our system. Let's do that. But to date, over the last several years, we haven't had any dollars to talk about. In fact, we've had a shortfall.
Well, let's talk. We just have a few minutes left, but let's talk now about the tax that was imposed. Okay, Governor Brewer suggested it. The sales tax increase, is that going to stay, or is that going to get so people are going to get so used to it, the legislature is going to stay forever, or is it going to go away?
Well, this was Proposition 100, and Governor Brewer did lead in a very difficult situation here where the budget was. It was a temporary tax. It is temporary. It expires in May of 2013. I heard the governor say in her State of the State, a promise is a promise. So that money is going away.
And will we be okay with that money going away? Is there planning for that?
the trend we're on right now, I would say we will be okay. We're cutting it close, and I think that's part of the difficult work that this legislature in session right now for that 2013 budget has to deal with. But I think the good thing here is that we passed a temporary tax, and what the citizens are going to see is this tax was truly temporary.
All right, one last question I'm going to hit you with. Are we missing out on a $10 billion in revenue because of sales tax revenue exemptions as reported in the Arizona Republic?
No. What the Republic reported I thought was a mild distortion. Of course, there are loopholes, and I would like to get rid of these loopholes. But if we were to do that, I would also like to lower the tax code. Why do you need $10 billion in revenue? You don't want to just collect money from the taxpayer to collect it. You want to have it to provide an essential state service. We're doing that at $8.3 billion today, and we should be thoughtful about how we expand that if we do.
All right, I appreciate that. We've been chatting with Doug Ducey, state treasurer. The time just flies. And we're leading into the Michael Savage Show. This is Dennis Wilenchek and Jack Wilenchek on KFNX. I want to thank Chet and Robert, who assist us on the show, and we'll be back next week, Wednesday, from 4 to 5. And, Doug, thank you so much. And, again, we'll continue to follow your efforts to try to make us all some money.
Thanks, Dennis, and thanks, Jack.
All right, take care.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Think of how many times in your silent thoughts you wished for something and then lost an opportunity. It came and then it went. When you believe in your good thoughts, you win. Start seeing into your future. Connect your spirit with your mind. Create your life. This is the learning experience shared in Life's Secret, The Gift, a new book by Dale C. Leo. To learn more, visit LifeSecretTheGift.com. That's LifeSecretTheGift.com.
You're listening to KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, Cape Creek, Phoenix, the home of Lou Dobbs, weekdays at 1 p.m. on KFNX. KFNX News Time. It's 5.